Panhandle women business leaders are independent with grit and determination, and they are proud of their strong community and agricultural roots.
You're listening to Buff Speak, the official podcast of the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University. I am Dr. Nick Gerlich, your host, as we meet up with the thought leaders making an impact today.
An interesting shift has happened in higher ed in recent decades. The number of female students has grown considerably, such that now at universities across the nation, about 60% are women. Gone are the days of young women seeking the hackneyed and cliched MRS degree, meaning a husband. No, they're preparing for careers, and if the growth continues, we'll soon outnumber men on campus 2-to-1. While the College of Business is a much more balanced 1-to-1, the presence of women earning degrees is very real. And furthermore, we are sending many women out into the business world, a place once dominated by men and in some regards, still playing by their rules. Three of my female colleagues here in the COB have just completed a compelling study of women in business in the Texas Panhandle, documenting their experiences, concerns, observations, and more. The result was her business story, Women Business Leaders of the Texas Panhandle. With me today are the authors of this study, Dr. Leslie Ramos-Salazar, Dr. Elena Cantrell-Robinson, and Dr. Jillian Yarbrough. Each has been on the show before, but never all together. My friends, please introduce yourselves so that listeners can at least put a name to the voice.
I'm Leslie Ramos-Salazar. I'm Professor of Business Communication and Decision Management and the Abdulak Professor of Business. I've been teaching business statistics and communication courses here at WT since 2015. I also do research on business communication, conflict management, and higher education.
I'm Elena Cantrell Robinson, and I am an assistant professor of marketing and business communication. I teach business communication classes and also marketing.
I'm Jillian Yarbrough, and I'm a clinical in the Virginia Engler Professor of Management, and I like to do research on understanding lived experiences.
So what was the purpose of this research, and whose idea was it?
The purpose of this study was to understand women's identities and being a female leader of a business in the Texas Panhandle, and to identify the social capital resources that are needed to achieve economic success amongst female-led businesses. Now, how did this idea start? Well, one day, Ms. Gina Woodward from the American Small Business and Development Center invited me to attend the Small Business Award event. And during this event, I felt so inspired and curious about the challenges and successes of these amazing businesswomen. I wanted to understand their stories, their experiences, especially here in the Texas Panhandle, because not much has been written about the matter here in Texas.
So I understand the three of you were also awarded a research grant from the Engler College of Business. And what was the name of the grant, and how did this all come to be?
The name of the grant is the Engler Societal Impact Research Grant. During the fall, we formed a women in business research team. I figured I would invite two strong qualitative experts who are very good at interviewing and who are also leading the Women in Business Student Club at our college. We had a few meetings, we drafted the grant proposal, then the grant committee met, including Dr. Paul Engler, and they generously agreed to fund our project. When we received the news that we got it, we were just so thrilled because we have the chance to bring this project to life.
So tell me a little bit more about this project. How did you go about conducting your research? How did you select your participants and, you know, all the nuts and bolts of the study?
So Leslie developed this idea and talked to Elena and me about how we could contribute and be a team. And the purpose, the goal was really to understand the lived experiences of women in the Panhandle. And I was really excited to have this opportunity. My roots are in West Texas and New Mexico. I have generations of family, and I've been privileged to know women in this area my entire lifetime. And we are unique. And I have been mentored and taught and learned all kinds of things, from preparing green beans to running businesses, from the Panhandle women. And they're very, very powerful women with the depth of their knowledge. So when Leslie introduced this idea, we wanted to put together a qualitative study such that we could understand, what is it like to be a woman in the Panhandle? What is it like to be an entrepreneur specifically? What challenges and what benefits are you going to experience as a female in this area, trying to thrive and lead and design business? So we interviewed 30 different women, and we had structured questions, but we sought to allow the women to extrapolate. So while we had structured questions asking them about, what is it you do? What type of entrepreneur are you? How do you define yourself in these types of things? What challenges do you experience? What benefits will you experience as a female leader in these areas? We had these structured questions, but we each had this idea of, when the participants chose to share, we let them extrapolate. And sometimes an additional question might come from that, from what they had to share. So we had structured interviews. We wanted to do 30. The qualitative research generally says, you know, with 14 interviews, you may reach saturation. So we wanted to certainly exceed that. Then after we conducted these interviews, we compiled our data. Elena did much of our analysis, looking at it, our initial analysis, and she identified key themes. And then Leslie and I came back and I, you know, looked at the data again, organized in the same way, and identified if we found consistent themes. And from understanding these themes, we were able to then draw conclusions. And it, you know, this is one type of research where you're interviewing, listening, organizing, and analyzing to identify themes and commonalities, one type of research. And then certainly, you know, surveys or quantitative measurements of performance or output or something would be another type of research. But we purposefully picked this because we wanted insight into the female experience specific to the Panhandle, such that we can contribute to other women's future success.
So how did you go about doing this research, collecting your data as words in this case, as opposed to numbers? Did you meet face to face with these people or by other means?
Our interviews were all via Zoom. And go ahead.
I was going to say, actually, I did one interview face to face.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So we split them up. And we each did some separate. So it sounds like a couple of face-to-face, but the most of them were via Zoom. We were careful to record. We were careful to transcribe. And then we were seeking the themes from the transcription through searching through the transcriptions. Go ahead.
Yeah. And that really did help us. And one thing about Zoom is, even though everybody talks about how impersonal it is, you can have a really good Zoom meeting where you're looking at each other's, you know, eyes and kind of really getting into it. So the Zoom or the technology didn't really separate us.
Without the technology, we couldn't have met with many of these women. So even though it's a little different, it was the medium we had to reach them.
Did you have any kind of method to your madness for your sample of 30? I mean, did you have like age quotas of, we need 2 young, 3 middle-aged, and we need African-American, Hispanic, white, or, you know, certain professions? Or did you just gather up 30 people?
This was actually a convenient sample of 30 participants. And by saying by convenience, we mean that we used other people to help us find the women leaders. And so because of this, we didn't necessarily say we're going to have a certain number of groups, because we didn't know what we were going to find. This study was extremely exploratory, and you know, it hadn't ever been done before. We had no way of knowing what we were going to find. Or we knew that there were women leaders. We just could not have said how many or what the age group gender, not gender, of course, not gender, racial, background would be.
And how long were these interviews? Were they pretty uniform, or did some of them just unexpectedly go on and on for a long time?
Okay, so as the person that analyzed the data, it was interesting because you had some people that, while they answered the questions fully, they definitely just, answered the question and you got a good sense of what they had lived, their lived experience. Some people really did talk a long time. I mean, they had things that they wanted to say. And we did, at the end, say, is there anything you'd like to add? And those additions were really very interesting.
I had some 10 minutes, 15 yeah. minutes, and those were interesting participants. They're very succinct people, business oriented, And then I had someone who shared that almost an hour or more. It was very interesting to see.
So probably 20 to 30 minutes was probably the average.
And when did you do these conversations and start analyzing and then writing up? Because this is a pretty painstaking process, at least through the eyes of someone like me who is very quantitatively driven. I do numbers, not words.
Well, we collected the interviews during the spring of the year, and then Elaina took the charge of doing the data transcription, the data analysis, all the preliminary work over the summer. And then the team was just amazing. We just all wrote the paper by the end of the summer and then took the early fall for editing and that kind of deal.
Did you have any challenges along the way, speed bumps?
I know for me, one challenge was the timeline of the project, making sure that all of us achieved our research goals in a timely manner. It's not something you could just procrastinate. The good news is that we were successful in achieving all our deadlines.
So you've also been able to share your findings, which we'll get to a little bit later here. But you got to share your findings with some local audiences, and you also received some much-deserved media coverage. Tell us about that.
We're just so grateful. WT Marketing really helped us. So the first luncheon talk ended up selling out, and this occurred at the WT Enterprise Center, and it came out in the local 4 News and the Fox News. Then News Channel 10 marketed our Encore breakfast event. We found that the media was very interested in our project and our findings because we're looking at women business leaders of the Texas Panhandle. This is an understudied population.
And what kind of response did you get from those in attendance at these presentations?
It was very positive. The types of questions they were asking really made us think, and it even gave us ideas for future research.
I have to ask, because, we've been talking here about qualitative research. You relied on interviews and transcripts. These things take time, a lot of time. You said each survey, some were 10 to 20 minutes, but others went on considerably longer. Transcribing, it takes a while, and then analyzing all those words. It's a very, very labor-intensive method of research, as opposed to just, here, take this survey and punch some keys here, and it'll all go in the database. Why did you choose this route? Because you could have sent out a survey, right, and had a few open-ended questions.
I think with qualitative interviews, it can be very time consuming. But quantitative, you kind of have to know what your answers are going to be in the just before you ask the questions, because you have to codify them. You have to make sure that they're weighted this, the right amount and everything. With qualitative, it's a free for all. I mean, it means you review the data, you have interview answers, which is the data, you find the similarity, then you combine those answers into themes. And then with me, I went back to the original audio and checked all of the transcriptions that I had to make sure that I had exactly what they said. So it was very time consuming. So when Leslie says that I took the summer to analyze the data, I took the summer to analyze the data.
For the benefit of our listeners, what are the pros and cons of qualitative versus quantitative research?
So you touched on one of the obviously biggest cons for some people. Some people would perceive the time required to do a qualitative study as a con. I think our team viewed it as a pro in the sense that our goal, in my mind, our goal was to truly understand what it's like. What is this experience of hardship, of value, of meaning, and what's unique about being a female entrepreneur in the panhandle? And you don't get that from check the box. You get that from hearing the story. And even in a transcription, you miss a little bit of the meaning that comes from us sitting and listening. But you have to sit and listen. You have to get the interviews. I think every time I start a qualitative study that is going to be interview-based, I say to myself, am I going to get all the interviews? I never know. Now, I cannot think of a study I didn't finish, but it is always daunting to get those 30 interviews, to get those 30 people to agree. Then you're going to schedule some and some are going to cancel and need to be rescheduled. And that's life, right? And then some are, you know, so getting those interviews, then getting the time to coordinating time that. And I think that was one of our challenges. We might get somebody who could interview and then we had to check which three of us are available because we also are busy, right? So and you really needed to prioritize the interviewees' needs. So whenever they said they could be there, you need to prioritize that. And luckily, we had a team of people. If you're an individual interviewer, it can be overwhelming to fit the needs of the interviewees. And then I think going through the transcriptions, again, it's very labor intensive. And then you want to have a double check with your team and have other people verify they're also seeing those same themes. So it is labor intensive. It is scheduling can be challenging, but the pros are you get a different insight into people. You get to, when you talk to people, and I would say this is one of our greatest takeaways from this study. When you talk to people and you understand, you know, I teach human resources. It's very different to send out a survey to employees and say, what benefits would you like? And they put down 401k or healthcare. That's very different than if I go to my employees and I say, what do you need from the organization? And then they would say, healthcare, but they would say what it is specific in the healthcare that they need. And the same with this interview. While we can quantify the themes, we can say 8 of the participants said they have this, they need, or they had this experience. We got the value of knowing what it was that they experienced. And then we can share that and hopefully motivate and bring about support for other women coming up.
You said a very important word there about 3 minutes ago, listen. And I think that speaks to the importance of this study being women studying women, because it would not have worked well if men were doing the study, right? The dynamic would have been completely off. Men are not known to be great listeners. I know I'm making a sweeping generalization, but it's true because we're too busy scheming how we're going to mansplain or talk about ourselves, right? And so I think you guys, you saw the urgency of doing this the right way so that you could build a rapport with your participant and give them the assurance that you're listening, not just, you know, taking a few notes and figuring out how you can tell your story at the same time, right? How did you come up with the questions, though? I've seen your list of questions. I've actually seen your PowerPoint. It's very, very well done. I can see this being a lot like three chefs getting together in the kitchen and going through the cabinets and finding a bunch of things and deciding what are we going to put in to the Instapot tonight. How did you make that decision?
Well, in terms of deriving the questions, we first had to select the theoretical frameworks, right? So we found our two theories we wanted to use for the study, and then we really wanted to kind of, what do we want to understand from these women? And a lot of it was the challenges, the benefits. What is their story? What are they going through? And what advice would they give to other women in the same situation? So we kind of looked into that. And then we verified, making sure that the questions made sense as a team. And then we went from there.
I think we also wanted to stay on a positive exploration. There certainly were questions we could ask that could have spurred negativity. And we thought we want to be seeking positivity.
All good research teams find its members have distinct skills and by virtue of that make distinct contributions. Often it's based on their own specializations. What did each of you bring to this project?
I know I was able to partner our team with America's SBDC and the WT Enterprise Center. This was important because they really helped us recruit these women business leaders for this project. All of us were part of developing questions, conducting interviews. I worked on the introduction and the background. Jillian worked on the literature review and also confirming the data themes. Elaina took the lead really in the transcription and identifying the coding schemes to develop the themes per question. Then Jillian and I worked on refining some of the quotes and the team co-edited the manuscript.
When we come back, we'll look at what my colleagues learned in this study, and I'm pretty sure that women in business see their world through a very different lens than men do.
Blogs come in all shapes and sizes these days, and in more cases than not, it's just someone complaining about something. Rare Indeed is the blog that actually dives into the business and economics events of the day. ProfSpeak.com, the official blog of the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University, is just that. With a staff of seasoned and knowledgeable professors who write a new installment each week, it's not over the top like the others. It's on top of things. We'll look for you down at the corner of thought leadership and societal impact. Check it out at ProfSpeak.com and stay on top too. Reach for the stars and do it with a WT business degree in hand. For more info, find us at wtmu.edu/cob or call 806-651-2500. From the Texas Panhandle to the world, we're here to help you reach those stars.
How common are female entrepreneurs?
They are becoming more common in Texas. Actually, our state is currently ranked 5th in the nation for women-led businesses and entrepreneurship, with the expectations that we will rank number 1 in the near future. Actually, the Office of the Texas Governor states that 1.25 million businesses are women-owned. Considering the U.S., 42% of small businesses are women-owned.
And what kind of an impact do they make on overall U.S. business?
Women make a tremendous economic impact, bringing in $1.9 trillion of revenue. They increase job creation, stimulate innovative products. They make a positive impact in sustainability, such as reducing poverty and hunger and increasing education in their communities.
But still, all is not perfect because there are gender gaps out there. Can you explain these?
Yes, of course. The gender gap continues to be a real problem. Most companies are still led or owned by males. And when we look at CEO positions, only 8% are women. There's also a gender pay gap occurring where men continue to make more money than women. In the U.S., for example, full-time working women earn 82 cents per every dollar earned by men. Well, yes, it's an improvement from making 70 cents in 2014. There's still a gap that needs to be addressed. Now, this calculation, of course, can vary based on industry, hours worked, and educational levels. Also, women tend to face moral objections more than men when they break this glass ceiling and they take on these leadership positions. For instance, individuals might ask themselves, shouldn't you be devoting more time for your children and your family? Or have subconscious thoughts such as, there should be a man in charge here. Or is this female-owned business going to fail?
In your study, you looked at social identity and the theory of leadership. But tell us what this is and maybe how women differ from men in this regard.
So with this theory, they're identifying that there's generally a prototypical leader within your mind, right? We each in this room have a picture of what a leader would be to us. And this picture is formed based on our lived experiences. My childhood growing up in Albuquerque and my academic background and my career and my position, you know, childhood position within my family and with your siblings and all of those things tell me, what does a leader look like? And luckily in the United States, we have great diversity with people who have had broad lived experiences, and their lived experiences, somebody who has grown up in another state, in another sibling position in their family, in another gender, in another career field or something, they would perceive and have an idea of a leader, a prototypical leader, and that would be different for them. And social identity theory is saying that people generally follow, respect, will agree with, line up with a leader that fits their prototypical perspective. What do they see as a leader? So the followers, their perceptions are shaping the leader, and the leader is shaping the followers, right? And so the followers generally are not going to follow somebody that is outside that what is considered prototypical for them. And so this is a challenge for women. It's a challenge for men, right? And anytime you join into a group, can you understand the group's vision of a leader, and can you fit within that? And there's only so many things we can change about ourselves. And sometimes we just are not a fit, and sometimes we can modify and fit within that prototypical vision of a leader that is all often happening subconsciously. People are not consciously choosing, but they are identifying and observing their leader and rewarding their leader and following their leader based on their leader's demonstration of these prototypical characteristics. And so when women appear outside of the norm in some of their behaviors or outside how somebody would perceive a prototypical leader for them, they may have different challenges in leading that group.
You also examine social capital theory. What's this, and how and why does it apply to women in business?
So social capital is fascinating in that, you know, we know what money, capital, right? But these relationships, social capital is your ability to develop, sustain, and you know, launch from social relationships. And we found, you know, certainly that social relationships are critical specifically for women in terms of building leadership. And we've known that for a long time. You can see people who are able to navigate within groups, who are able to be positive and bring people together. That's a powerful resource, one that's hard to measure when you know somebody who can achieve something, when you can bring somebody in who can bring in interesting information or knowledge. So social capital is this ability to work with and through people, and it's very important.
I like to also add that there are different types of social capital, and two types are building and bonding social capital. And women tend to do a very good job with bonding social capital. They make friends. They talk about their worries and their days, and so they're bonding at that time. But building social capital is with people that are not necessarily your one-off friend or coworker. They tend to be people that are not as closely associated with you. And building social capital can be very difficult for women. Women have been found, and in my studies, I've seen that they're reluctant to use building social capital. Well, building social capital is how you get your jobs, how you get opportunities, because a lot of times the things that you know, your friends, your bonding group already know that. But building social capital, using building social capital, expands your network.
Now, Elena, you said that this truly was an exploratory study, which makes sense. But even in exploratory studies, you have to have some specific research questions in mind that you want to find out? You want to find answers. It's not like you're just going fishing, seeing what comes up. What were your RQs?
The first question was, what are the identities of being a female leader of business in the Texas Panhandle? The part B to that was, how does the environment shape the identities of being a successful female leader of business in the Texas Panhandle? The second question was, what are the challenges faced by female leaders in the Texas Panhandle? And the third question was, what social capital resources are needed to achieve economic success among female-led businesses in the Texas Panhandle?
So I want to know a little more about these participants. You said it was a convenient sample, but what kinds of demographics did you wind up with?
There were 30 participants that were women leaders in the Texas Panhandle. 89,773 was the average salary. Of that group, the years of leadership ranged from 5 years to 40 plus years. And half of the leaders or the participants had bachelor's degree and one third had master's degree.
All right, this is the big question, and I'm going to just kick back and listen while you guys talk about it. What were your key findings for the various research questions?
With the what were the identities, we found several identities, several themes, as we call them. Servant leadership was very important. Trustworthy and knowledgeable. Trailblazer or pioneer. Struggling self-acceptance. Rooted in deep values. And assertive and direct. These are all things that the women use to describe themselves. The second question with the environment, how did the environment shape the identities? They were hardworking with strong ag roots, strong community, and abundant opportunities. With the second question with the challenges, they were working and having a family, lack of confidence, a male-dominated workplace, discrimination, and money and raising capital. With the third question, with those social capital resources that are needed to achieve economic success, they were accessibility to resources, networking skills and community involvement, educational attainment, and social environmental support.
Overall, are Panhandle women treated equally and fairly compared to their male counterparts? I mean, do they have access to the same resources, similar pay, similar opportunities?
I think they gave some varied answers in their experiences. I think they did perceive that men have different types of social capital and that women cannot always break into those areas of social capital. But just as you said, you know, had this study been conducted by men, they might not have been able to get the same stories from the women. So women, we have our avenues of social capital as well. So I think that that was one of the findings. I definitely heard variations of the challenges are overwhelming. I'm not sure women can break through male-dominated work environments. Two, I've not had any issues, and I've had fabulous experiences working with men and women. I think we had some who had both. I think both extremes and everything in the middle were authentic, genuine stories and lived experiences. So I think in the Panhandle, we have some amazing opportunities for women. I know these women who participated in the study feel called to support other women. So I know that there's more support coming. I also think there are women in the Panhandle today that have been stifled, and it is their perception and their experience that they were stifled due to an inability or are unable to access or break through male-dominated work environments.
Well, we can all say now, happily, that we have a national election in the rearview mirror. It's still fresh in our minds here the day that we are recording this conversation, and we all know how it turned out, and we all know, the pros and cons of each candidate, their traits, and so forth. And I, you know, without getting into the politics of it and having an eraser fight or anything here between us, I felt sorry for candidate Harris, because as a female, and she's certainly not the first woman to try to reach the White House, I felt like we were applying masculine standards to a woman. And I saw that many times. And the one that stuck out the most to me was a few weeks ago when she was on The View and she was asked how you know, what would she do differently compared to President Biden? And she just said nothing. And I thought, she finds her identity in her boss, which is a lot like what you just said a few minutes ago. And yet at the same time, there's a time to be nice, and then there's a time to be not so nice, and especially when you're running for something as big as president, and maybe that was the time that she needed to be distancing herself or making herself a little bit more unique than just following in the exact footsteps of her boss. What do you think about that?
Well, I do think, and there's lots of research that supports this, and I think the women in this room, we are conditioned to be polite and to be kind. And again, in thinking about Kamala Harris and that answer, it's not a good idea to say disparaging things about a boss. And so I think she was in a difficult situation. And I you know, actually, this was one of the questions at one of our talks. They were asking about this election. And I would go back to the social identity theory, and whether conscious or not, you know, we've all grown up with male presidents. That is our prototypical, even if it's just subconscious, view of who is a leader in our country. And it'll take some time and maybe some generational change for people to have a different prototypical view of what a president of the United States looks like.
When you were presenting this, primarily in front of women, but there were probably some men there too, did you find the women doing a lot of this and I like almost saying amen?
Oh, yes, definitely. It was it was very favorable. Our presentations were very favorable because we were pretty much preaching to the choir. You could say that for sure.
If you had to give an elevator speech, let's suppose you're in Amarillo and you're going to the top of the Southwest Bank building all the way up to the Amarillo Club. So you got like 31 floors. And you're talking to a stranger and you're trying to tell them the essence of everything you did and everything you found out, what would you say?
I would say, women in the panhandle, we are unique and we want to embrace that. And we know who we are. And some of the words that we use to describe ourselves are gritty and strong and resilient. And we want to embrace that. We don't want to hide it. We want to embrace it, we want to acknowledge it, and we want to bring it to our leadership. And I would also say some takeaways. When we're working in an environment, we want to be compassionate and kind to each other. Some of the women had some really hard stories, and I imagine, I know for sure, men do too. In the workplace, can we be compassionate and kind and productive? I would hope the answer is yes. And finally, I think it is critical that women understand we need each other. And you've got to be very skilled at developing your social capital. And as women, we want to be skilled at supporting women, and we want to be skilled at supporting men, and we want to be skilled at understanding what followers are looking for in their leaders.
After the break, we'll look into the future of this team, future research, and perhaps most importantly, the future for Texas Panhandle businesswomen.
West Texas A&M University has been in the education business since 1910, carrying on a tradition of teaching above all else. And while we made a strong effort to get ahead of the curve in 1997 with our online courses and programs, we never forgot our roots. That's another way of saying we're still rocking it old school with face-to-face classes. Our classrooms in the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business are small by design, so that you can actually get to know your professors and fellow classmates. It's an intimate learning experience, and we offer undergraduate majors in 12 areas. We're double ACSB accredited and among the most elite of business schools around the world. Reach for the stars and do it with a WT BBA degree in hand. For more info, find us at wtamu.edu/COB or call 806-651-2525. From the Texas Panhandle to the world, we're here to help you reach those stars.
The ultimate goal of any research grant is to get your findings published in an academic journal. What are your plans for these findings?
Well, on the research side, we already submitted our paper to an academic business journal. We plan to submit our next paper by early next year. We'll also submit our paper to a national conference for a presentation. On the more practical side, we hope to use some of these findings to inspire mentorship of younger female generations who wish to someday own a business themselves or become a leader of a company. We will work with the Women in Business Club to sponsor career mentorship panels and eventually establish female business leader mentors for these young women.
So what are your contributions to academia and women in business?
With this project, we hope to contribute to the academic literature of social identity and social capital in relation to leadership in regional communities such as the Texas Panhandle. We hope to share these stories and experiences from these leaders to inspire other women in business. We find that our study confirms the experiences that these women leaders are going through. And from the talks we were able to give based on our research, women felt empowered and validated because they felt that they were not the only ones dealing with these same challenges.
Well, the fact that you've gone, half a year now, a long time from project conception through deployment, presentations, write-ups, it tells me that the three of you have kind of clicked. And it's always great to see an academic team get along with a common goal. So I have to ask you, do you have any future research plans together? And if so, what are they?
You know, we ended up with a lot of valuable data for this project. So we're planning a lot of projects relevant to women in business. Like I said, our next paper will highlight the challenges and how women overcome them. Our third paper will be more about mentoring the business women. And actually, it will be submitted to the University of New Mexico's mentoring conference. And it will be submitted to their publication outlet. After all these projects, we're still considering doing some quantitative research by using some of the qualitative themes from the study.
Do you think your findings are applicable to women everywhere in business? I mean, you obviously did a highly localized study, the Texas Panhandle. It's an area about the size of West Virginia, 26 counties. Do you think your findings can be extrapolated elsewhere? Should the study be replicated in other places to assess for possible differences?
We really were seeking to understand women in the Panhandle. And I think we accomplished that well. But I do think women have a lot of commonalities. And I think women entrepreneurs have a lot of commonalities. I absolutely think there is relevance in this study in understanding women business leaders. There certainly is broad, overarching, key information that could be insightful across the United States or throughout the globe. I also think it is a good foundation for examining local entrepreneurs within your own area. So people could use it as a foundation of understanding women entrepreneurs absolutely throughout the globe. And then they could also use and maybe replicate it to understand the women's needs within their areas.
I actually hope other researchers take our research and extrapolate it and perhaps make their own area research. We were able to do the Texas Panhandle because we're very familiar with the Texas Panhandle, but there are other locations that they might find totally different results, but we would have a harder time going into there and finding out that information.
Like maybe Los Angeles, a little bit more progressive area and very different from Amarillo and Canyon.
Yes, definitely.
Well, based on what you did and what you discovered among Panhandle businesswomen, what kinds of things do you think need to be improved for their ongoing success?
One of the concerns that I remember, and I remember it from the research, and then it was also mentioned in one of our presentations, but the access to capital. Several of our participants said that they did not have the same access to capital on the same level. And part of that was because the banking, the lenders have a certain model. It's based on the ag production. And as most of our women leaders, they were not in the ag area. One woman said something like, my neighbor was lent like $100,000 for his production, for his ag production, but they could not find $20,000 to give me to improve my kitchen. Well, you know, that's apples and oranges, but I think that's one of the things that the women's really have faced is just being in different businesses, and capital is always important when you're in business.
Well, at the risk of invoking the memories of when that Mars and Venus book was out 30 years ago, how would you define fundamental differences between men and women in business? And is this a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's valuable to have men and women working together. They both bring, in general, great assets to the organization. And I think also, you know, something interesting we've kind of talked about in this is the social capital that they bring, or the ability to listen and lead in different groups. It's good to have both. I think the women described challenges of trying to care for families, and I don't know if we've touched on that as much. They did perceive they needed to balance caring for their parents, balance caring for their children, balance care of the home, and that I do not know that I don't know the lived experience of experiences of men, and we did not interview men, so I know for sure they experience challenges that are overwhelming and great pressure, and in terms of care of their families, but I don't have that information. So I have the information on the women, and the women are trying to balance that. But I also think having women who understand the way in which they work. We can care for children. We can care for our parents, and we can do a great job in the office. We can do those things. And so having women on your team who can advocate for and say, it is okay that she's had a child. It's going to be okay. She can also do her job and have this child. She can also do this job and care for her parents. It's going to be okay, you know? And so I think that's very important. And I think what I would like to see most is great teamwork and great collaboration across the genders.
Do you think women will ever surpass men in business, much like women have gone flying by men in overall university enrollment?
Personally, I think we will continue to see an increase of women entrepreneurs and in leadership positions. In business, though, the gap, yes, it will continue to close a bit, but not all the way through.
Based on your findings, how should we be training our female students as they prepare to enter the workforce?
I think that the education at WT prepares our students for the job. But we need to be role models and mentors for our female students. There's a saying that says, if you can see it, you can be it. And so women, these women leaders, we're trying to find ways to expose women, young women students, female students, to women leaders. And so they can see that that is actually their future and where they can go.
Lastly, how has this research changed you and how you view women in business?
This research has really opened my eyes to how women view their own leadership identities and the challenges that they actually deal with. Women in business are very passionate, skilled, and strong. They work super hard to keep their businesses going, sometimes working 24/7 almost. And when I see them thrive and be successful, I just respect them for that.
Actually, it didn't change my opinion or any of my thoughts, because I had a working mother that was in leadership. I have been a working mother in leadership. I resonated with our participants, women in business who are striving every day to make their company better and to also be an effective leader.
I was impacted by each and every interview. For me, I walked away thinking, that person's amazing. I'm thankful they're in my community. And I have a lot of faith in the ability of women to lead, to creatively develop projects, and to, they have a lot to offer. I was inspired by the women I talked to.
Our guests today have been Dr. Leslie Ramos-Salazar, Dr. Elena Cantrell Robinson, and Dr. Jillian Yarbrough. Okay, draw straws real quickly, one of you please, and lead us out the door. What does the future look like for Panhandle women in business?
Panhandle women are gritty, they're resilient, they're strong, and their entrepreneur leadership skills are going to grow.
You've been listening to Buff Speak from the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University. Our executive producer is Justin Lovell, and Allison Hunter is our associate producer. Our co-editors are Maverick Evans and Paul Torres. Lindsay Bjork is our director of marketing and outreach initiatives, which includes overseeing Buff Speak. Dr. Jeffrey Babb is director of accreditation and is our technical consultant. Finally, Dr. Amjad Abdullah is Dean of the College. You can find us online at wtamu.edu/COB for more information about our programs. Be sure to check out our many academic offerings. Come for the quality, stay for the small classes, affordable tuition, and friendly, approachable professors. And look online at our faculty blog, profspeak.com, for more insights. You can listen to Buff Speak on your favorite podcast portal, as well as on our website, buffspeak.biz. And if you like what you've been hearing, don't be afraid to share us with your friends, colleagues, and family. Word of mouth has always been the best form of advertising. Until next time, love one another. For the Paul and Virginia Engler College of Business at West Texas A&M University, I am Dr. Nick Gerlich. And as always, go Buffs!
Buff Speak.